The Defense Department wants to add 4,000 more people to its cyber command. The plan envisions revving up the three-year-old command with a three-pronged program to defend federal networks, protect critical infrastructure, and attack if necessary. Pentagon planners leaked the plan to the Washington Post and New York Times ahead of making a formal request. But should that plan gain approval in Congress, the question would be where DOD hopes to find 4,000 cyber professionals. Some answers, we turn to Alan Paller, Director of Research at the SANS Institute. Alan, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
All right, so is this story that has come out, is it, first of all, before we get to the people, is this a major expansion of strategy, or was this pretty much always what they envisioned for Cyber Command?
It is exactly what they envisioned for Cyber Command, but the first time they tried it, the services did not have the people. So this isn't a discussion about lots of new money. This is a discussion about people and skills. And they asked each of the services for 3,000 people in the first round 3 years ago. But the services laughed, literally laughed, because they didn't have 300. And the problem is that in the intervening 3 years, the services' ability to create new people to do the actual work that the Cyber Command needs done, has been spotty. And so what this really is a major shift upward in the conversion of people who, people into the actual hands-on cybersecurity jobs.
So what sort of skills do they need that are so hard to come by?
I'll give you the situation that they find themselves in. They've got a bunch of networks to that they're responsible for protecting. They get news from the intelligence side of the house that there's a new kind of attack. All the tools that they have were looking for old kinds of attacks. Somebody has to readjust the tools that morning so that they could be looking for the new kinds of attacks. So the tools they need are deep understanding of how the attacks work, the ability to write code, the ability to analyze network traffic for new attacks, the ability to analyze software for flaws. It's a combination of very, very technical skills that are just very rare to find, Emily.
And it sounds like these technical skills to be applied properly in a setting as critical as military or government or critical infrastructure also takes some experience of years of applying this so that you kind of have a sense of what's coming at you.
Yes, exactly. Ed Giorgio is the master at this. He's the one who coined a phrase for the people they're actually looking for. They're called hunters and tool builders. And he was the head of cryptography for the NSA when he retired after 25 years. But his theory is 10,000 hours to become world class, that you really have to have the hands-on experience. And we have a group of people in cybersecurity that do have hands-on experience, but almost three quarters have never actually done any cyber work on a computer. Everything they've ever done has been, except on Microsoft Word, everything they've ever done is writing reports. They've never actually done it. And this is what you're seeing in this announcement is a huge shift in training and in who gets to call themselves cybersecurity people, from people who write reports to people who actually can do the work.
So what does the Pentagon have to do between, say, now and a couple of years from now in order to get all of the hunters and tool builders that it needs?
They're already starting it three different ways, three different services, three different ways. I'll give you the models. One model is at the Air Force, where they figured out how to take people who are skilled and make them very skilled. They have a program at the Air Force called INTW, Intermediate Network Warfare Training, that is the best at putting out people who actually can do the work hands-on. And those people are in very high demand all over the Air Force. And they're, I think, doubling the number of people through the program, and they're probably going to try to multiply it by five over the next couple of years. Another model is to take warrant officers in the Army and start from scratch and build up the skills. And then the third one, the Navy just has a different model that I don't actually understand very well. But the key that everyone has just discovered, I think they already knew it, but they just discovered it, is that you can't take anybody and make them into a cyber person, that there's a certain way the brain works that allows you to look at systems from the flaw perspective rather than from the functional perspective. And so the real key is, and all three of the services are talking about this, as is DHS, is to have a talent search among all the existing workers to find the people who have these skills, who have the natural talent to build the skills. That's really what needs to be done first is the talent search. And the way you do talent searches is with hands-on work. You give them hands-on opportunities and you see how good they are. You don't take multiple choice tests.
So it's like getting into Juilliard if you want to be able to do this for the military. We're speaking with Alan Paller, Director of Research at the SANS Institute. So what you say with respect to the talent search and the hours needed sounds like the military, and you can tell me if you agree, that they would have, they're going to have better luck training their own people that they can identify than just trying to do this through outside hiring.
Yeah, that's the great insight that they had. I think that they're not able to hire them. The contractors can't find them either. So they can build this talent within. It's a huge effort. And I don't mean hugely expensive. It may be that as well. But sometimes there are things that are just hard to do. And this is really hard to do. So it's much easier to teach people about cybersecurity, to teach them to become frequent flyers instead of to teach them to become pilots. And it's now a time when they've discovered that they don't have enough pilots, they don't have enough people who can actually do it, and they're working at it.
And you said that this was the plan all along, but they just didn't have the manpower. Do you think that they're going to have better luck in a couple of years? Will they be able to grow that workforce by 4,000 or so?
Yes, because they're not really growing the number of people in the military. They're growing the number of people with these skills. So think of it as moving people from jobs where they're writing about this stuff to jobs where they are actually doing it. I think the numbers are going to end up about 80% military and 20% civilian of these 4,000. And they're going to build these people, and I think the competition for these jobs will be enormous because they're exciting, and more importantly, when you're good at this, you're going to have a lot of job opportunities when you retire. This is the best path. This is like becoming a pilot in the military in the 40s and 50s, and then the airline industry was starting. It's huge opportunities for very well-paid, very respected jobs, and this is the new path to those very well-paid, very respected jobs in banks and in power companies and in software companies and in consulting companies. So I think they won't have any trouble finding people who want to. The key is finding people who can.
A lot of writers and commentators have made reference, even some cabinet secretaries, to a cyber 9/11. But it sounds like we're facing more of a cyber Sputnik moment than maybe a 9/11 moment, where we can kind of keep up with what's going on, but we're really not on top of the game. And so would you say that's a good analogy to kind of a call to arms to get a national effort going so that we are good at this, so that the Sputnik doesn't scare us anymore?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, Tom. In fact, let me put a sharp point on it. What we discovered in the last year and a half, and NSA has actually published for official use only documents that have gotten out, that basically say you no longer, if you're in the military, you no longer can operate your networks as if they are clean of unwanted visitors, meaning you have to act as if they are already infected. And when you decide that you can't just try to keep stopping people at the perimeter because you already failed to do that, then everything becomes skills. You have to be able to find the stuff. You have to be able to do phenomenal, very fast forensics. You have to be able to get them out. You have to find them, their actions when the infections are acting. And the reason for this is that if they stay in the system, the military commanders can't trust the data they're getting from one another. And you're not going to send men and women into harm's way if you don't know that the data you're getting is accurate. So they've got to find this stuff. They've got to get it out of the networks. It's already in the telecommunications networks. It's already in the power industry networks, and it's already inside military networks. And everything now is how good the skills can be.
In many ways, it seems as if this problem of all that infection in the network is a result of the drive to cut costs by getting rid of dedicated isolated lines, such as characterized, the AutoDIN system or CIPRNet years ago, and adopting the internet.
Yeah, a lot of it is connecting systems that used to not be connected. connected to the internet. That's absolutely true. But a bigger part of it, Tom, is that for 12 years, ever since GISRA happened, you may have remembered it, Senator Thompson came out GISRA before there was FISMA, cybersecurity in the military was a compliance game. They didn't really think it was dangerous. And so they hired a bunch of people and called them cybersecurity people, and all they could do was write reports. And now they found out that it was very dangerous all along, and they need to change fast. That's what you're seeing.
Alan Paller is Director of Research at the SANS Institute. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome.